to deal with people living in isolation and ignorance, and therefore prone to fight. And its object was to accustom them to a life of peace and quiet by the provision of amenities. He therefore gave private encouragement and official assistance to the building of temples, public squares, and good houses. He praised the energetic, and he scolded the slack, and competition for honour proved as effective as compulsion. Furthermore, he educated the sons of the chieftains in the liberal arts, and he expressed a preference for British ability as compared with the trained skills of the Gauls. The result was that instead of loathing the Latin language, they became eager to speak it effectively. In the same way, our national dress came into favour, and the toga was everywhere to be seen. And so, the population was gradually led into the demoralising temptations of arcades, baths, and sumptuous banquets. The unsuspecting Britons spoke of such novelties as civilization, when in fact they were only a feature of their enslavement. Now, this winning people over by providing amenities, Tacitus talks as though it was entirely Agricola's idea, probably has it already begun. It does appear, for instance, one crucial decision had been taken before the arrival of Agricola. And that was all connected with the town near where I live called Bath. At least we call it Bath. As you probably know, Bath had long been sacred to the Britons. There was the hot springs and so on, and they were sacred to the goddess Sulis. And now the Romans decided that Sulis was more or less the same as Minerva. So what they did was take Bath over and created a tremendous set of amenities sacred to the goddess Sulis Minerva, a kind of composite goddess. And it became a magnificent curative establishment, a magnificent sort of hospital or spa, if you like. The hot water spring was enclosed in a reservoir, and the unstable land around it was consolidated with driven piles of oak. And then work was begun on the construction of a temple and the baths. Almost certainly, this was a state project. Remember, Boudicca's revolt had only just been suppressed. It wasn't wise to load all the costs onto the people. It was a kind of symbol of reconciliation of British and Roman religions. And, of course, it was a marvellous advertisement for what the Romans could do. Marvellous advertisement for their engineering and for their amenities. So the Romans had found a way, it seems, of bringing the elites of Britain onto their side. Now, there have been television programmes and that sort of thing recently about things like what the Romans did for us. And you can compile a kind of list of what the Romans did for Britons in the period after 43 AD. What did they introduce? They introduced literacy in Latin, at least for the wealthy. They introduced rule by law, written law, trials in courts. They introduced cities. Londinium, for instance, soon had 30,000 people. It had 3 bathing establishments. It had an amphitheatre. It had a huge basilica, that's a town hall. You all know, of course, about the road system, which is vaguely indicated on that map that they developed. A market economy came into being. This affected some of the farmers who began to, instead of being subsistence farmers, just producing stuff for themselves, they became farmers who brought their produce to market. And new crops came in. You might be surprised to hear that before the Romans we didn't have any carrots, any onions, apples, pears or cherries. Well, all those appeared. The important coins, of course, became important. There were some coins before the Romans, but they seem to have been simply sort of prestige symbols rather than actually used in exchange for goods and that sort of thing. What you had in the Roman period was a coin that was actually used to buy things. Villas appeared. Again, if you live near me, you might have gone to a place called Chidworth, which is a famous Roman villa where, you know, they've got elaborate mosaics and that sort of thing. You've got industry, not just industry for a few people round the area where the industry was, but you've got a pottery industry, an iron industry, which produced stuff, produced goods for a wider area. And all this was possible, of course, because of the coins and because of the road system, which made it possible to transport it. Now, the impression, once you start making these sort of lists, the impression you get is that the 350 years between Claudius's invasion and the snapping of the bonds that tied Britain to the empire, usually dated to 410, were entirely dominated by Roman initiatives. But recently, this view has been challenged, especially by a man called Stuart Laycock. I can give you the names of his books if you want them. And what Stuart Laycock points out is that in the British Isles, the limitations of Roman imperial power was as obvious as the strength. Just think of there, Caledonia, that's up in the north, we call it Scotland. Caledonia remained unconquered. Tacitus says that his father-in-law, Agricola, had conquered the whole island of Britain. Absolutely wrong. Agricola did build some chains of forts north of the Tay, but they had to be abandoned soon after Agricola's governorship ended. And not even the Antonine Wall, that one, that was built by Hadrian's successor, Antoninus Pius, and not even that could be held. And in the end, they had to retreat again to Hadrian's Wall. So everything above there remained independent of Rome. According to Tacitus, Agricola did vaguely contemplate doing something about this place, Hibernia, or we call it Ireland. But he might have flitted through his mind, but certainly nothing was ever done. So, as Tacitus himself says, the Britons were surrounded by places where there was still the memory of independence. And a great deal of Britain itself, you know, Britain south of Hadrian's Wall, a great deal of that had apparently to be held down in military areas. You've not only got the north, practically the whole of the north was held down by great forts that are Borycombe in York, Corbridge and so on, up there. The whole of Wales had to be held down from a great legionary force at Dever or Chester, and another one down here at Caerleon in Gwent. And then, other than that, Roman control in Wales, what we call Wales, seems to have been limited to one or two forts which were designed largely to secure Roman control of the mineral resources of Wales. So the more you think about it, the more tenuous Roman control of Britain seems to have been. And if we turn to the heartland of Britain, you know, in other words, we forget the north and we forget Wales and just concentrate on this bit here, Rome divided it up into things called civitates. Civitates, that's our word, cities. But these cities were really just rural territories with a kind of county town, administered from some central town that might perhaps have something like a bath or a basilica and that sort of thing. And what the civitates seem to have done was coincided with the territory of these pre-Roman tribes. So you get a great deal of continuity. They call them civitates, but what you really got was areas with a centre, like, for instance, the centre of Corinium. The full name of it was Corinium, that's Cirencester, Corinium Dubonorum, the Corinium of the Duboni, who are the tribe inheriting inhabiting basically Gloucestershire round there, and it looks as though the people who were in charge in this area were largely the descendants of the old independent chieftains that had existed before Claudius came. So it looks as though in many ways Roman occupation didn't change a great deal. The old tribal structure may have been only modified. And in many places the peasants must have continued their lives much as they did before the Romans arrived. Despite new crops, the Romans did not introduce an agricultural revolution. So perhaps our first invasion, which is the Roman one, may have ended up changing Britain far less than you might think. And certainly, this conclusion helps to make sense of the fact that within an amazingly short time of the snapping of the political and military links with Rome in about 410, little but overgrown ruins remained to remind the Britons of their long association with the Roman Empire. Politically, as far as we can tell, the pre-Roman pattern of tribes reasserted itself. The towns and the villas are mostly abandoned. Coins ceased to be used. They were hardly necessary because the peasants reverted to subsistence farming, and what industry survived produced only for a very local market. Probably Latin fell out of use, except in one context, and that would have been the Christian religious context. How much progress Christianity had made in the last century of Roman rule, it seems impossible to say. But it's quite certain that the Christian church in Britain had attained nothing like the power it already had acquired in Gaul. So my conclusion about the Romans is it looks as though it's all changed. But it's all amazingly superficial. Romanitas, as it was called, Romanization, is a thin veneer that soon disappears again once the links of the empire are snapped. Now, I don't know whether, I think my best bet is every now and then to stop for a minute or two. We're about to come on to the second invasion, but if anyone has any questions they want to ask on the first, we could have a minute or two of that. So I don't know whether anyone would like to ask anything about this this Roman period.
Where did Boadicea come from?
She was of the Iceni, there in basically Norfolk, up there. And as I said, the Iceni had at first been allied with Rome, but the Romans behaved pretty appallingly, basically in an extraordinarily arrogant and insensitive manner, particularly when Boadicea's father died, when Boadicea didn't do exactly what they wanted, they had her flogged and raped, and not surprisingly, she wasn't terribly pleased. And the Iceni duly rebelled.
And how long from that point, when she was raped, to when she was committed suicide?
It's only a bit over a year. The rebellion seemed to have an amazing amount of success. As I said, they destroyed Londinium, Camulodunum, Verulamium, St Albans, and so on. All these places went up in smoke. But the legions were duly recalled. They were fighting in what we call Wales. They were duly recalled, and of course their discipline told. And at the same time, as I said before, the great difficulty for the Britons was keeping armies in the field. These were basically farmers, most of them, and, you know, the time off you can take from your agricultural tasks is very limited. The Romans have a kind of staying power, which Boudicca's armies simply didn't have.